side 2 of tape 1, an interview of Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum. 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 Rosenbaum. Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum. At this time.
In Silesia, which is now Poland.
Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum. 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 Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum.
Who had 9 children.
Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum. Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum. Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum. Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum.
Jumped her from one class to the other and
Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum. Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum. Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum. Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum.
Her parents were very, very.
Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum. Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum. Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum.
A cattle dealer. And
Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum. Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum. Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum.
My mother became an orphan when she was 15 years old and was
Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum. Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum. Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum. Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum.
Silesia, but his parents moved to a very, very
Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum. Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum. Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum.
Also was sent away from home.
Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum. Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum. Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum.
An apprentice.
Excuse me, Mrs. Baum. What year?
Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum. Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum. Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum.
And 83.
Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum. Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum. Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum.
My father, that was, of course, in 78.
Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum. Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum. Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum.
My father was a German.
Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum. Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum. Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum.
My grandmother was
Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum. Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum. Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum.
Catholic Church anymore.
Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum. Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum. Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum.
Nazala as an apprentice and lived with a very
Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum. Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum. Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum. Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum.
Very strictly religious practices.
Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum. Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum. Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum. Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum.
I think it was 23 years old.
Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum. Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum. Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum.
And he met my mother, who about her?
Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum. Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum. Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum.
Maybe was a
Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum. Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum.
My mother was a very, very
Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum. Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum. Mr. Stanley W. Rosenbaum.
Especially interested in what you had to say about the school system. Apparently you...
10 seconds.
No, no,
I'm
sorry. Okay. Apparently you felt that you were fairly satisfied with the school system and what was happening there. Is that true? Did I make the right assumption?
Yes, you might. You made the correct assumption, but in those days you didn't have much choice. You just went. You went. I mean, in those days, the parents were the dominant force that controlled the children. And you didn't argue. You could argue a little bit. You could talk about it. And sometimes you won, but that wasn't very often.
But the standards were high.
Pardon me?
The educational standards were high.
Yes, the standards were high.
And the teachers demanded results from the students.
Yes. I never even thought about them being high enough. This is the way it was, and everybody took it and made fairly decent grades. And but they, incidentally, at Colfax was the first teacher's training school. Yes, they had that there under Dr. Davis. And they named that Davis Elementary School that they just tore down. Remember on Douglas?
Yes.
Put that new apartment as the elderly. That was the Davis Elementary School in New Bedford. There was that down in Oakland. I forget. What's the name of the one down
Frick.
In Oakland?
Frick.
Davis is in Squirrel Hill.
From Colfax to Frick. So we had some of those teachers teach us too.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't have such an easy time of it, even in those days, because everybody knew they were new. And if you wanted your own teacher. So I think they did away with that, giving the younger girls the opportunity to come into the room, because you took advantage of that.
No Jewish.
Were most of the teachers in grade school and high school males or females?
Females. The only time I realized there were male teachers was in high school. Shimmy High School, there were teachers there in science, things like that, which I didn't take. But I'm basically female.
Okay.
All the way through.
So then after you finished school in the Pittsburgh public school system, you went on to, was it the University of Pittsburgh for a few years?
No, I went to the University of Pittsburgh and University of Pennsylvania.
You went there for a few years, and what did you take there, business subjects?
Business.
And then you joined the family firm, Rosenbaum's.
Right.
And worked your way up through the ranks. Could you tell us what job you started in?
Well, I was put in the various divisions. There was no organized way to it at that time. If you wanted to learn the business, you had to work in certain areas for a certain length of time. And that's what I did. And one of the first things I learned to do. They sent me out on a furniture delivery truck. I was 18 or 19 years old, and I worked there for a week out of the warehouse. And then came back into the store, obviously. And while I had been always working as an extra salesperson in the store until I was old enough to work permanently, then I came up as an assistant buyer, and merchandiser.
And at what point in your career with Rosenbaum's did you go to the retail training school at the University of Pittsburgh? I know you went, was it approximately 1924? Did you quit working at Rosenbaum's to go there?
Pardon me?
I was just wondering how this fit in. See, you went to grade school, high school, a few years of college.
Yes.
And then did you go directly to the retail training institute?
No.
You started to work at Rosenbaum's.
It had to be set up and organized first.
All right.
And they went to Pitt and said they would underwrite it. That, when I mean they, I mean the department stores.
All right.
They would
fine.
Underwrite it. So then they picked. Each store was allotted so many slots.
Yes.
And they picked. And I think there were four of us from Rosenbaum's, Kaufman's. They all had, and I think the first class amount of maybe 20, 22. Seemingly good prospects.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way it was, a year's course at that time.
So
you
then
went in the evening.
Oh, and you worked all day. So actually you were a full-time worker, part-time student. You really had lots of work to do, didn't you? All right. I believe you said you worked at Rosenbaum's until 1936.
1939.
I believe then that you would have been at Rosenbaum's at the time of the Great Flood. Is that true?
Correct.
Yes.
How was that? Was in 1937. Could you tell us how?
36, St. Patrick's Day.
Oh boy! Thank you very much. You have an excellent memory.
Oh, I lived through
that. That one, you
remember. Yes. Can you tell us something about that? I believe from the location of the store, you certainly had to have been pretty directly impacted.
Well, I'll try to be brief and tell you. The first indication that the waters were running out of control was that we were going home in the evening, around 5:30, 6 o'clock. There was an artesian well in the store. There was some place that were lucky to have good drinking water. And they bore down, and you could see, you know, there's an underground river that runs under there. And I heard them talking how fast the water was coming up, and somebody says, I don't know when it's going to stop. So we all walked down to the corner of Stanwix. I forget what the name of the street was at that point, where the Allegheny River is. And you could see it very high at that point. So we left and we came home. Took the streetcar into town the next day. This was the 17th. And as we got to the corner of what now is Grant and 7th Avenue, the motorman says, this is as far as we go. And everybody said, what do you mean? He says, take a look. So we all got out of the streetcar and walked down and took a look, and there were the waters lapping up around Gimbel's at that time. That was Kaufman and Bear in those days. Well, that's as far as we got. The damage, the waters, as you know, rose 38 feet. I have a picture taken of the inside of Rosenbaum's from the balcony showing the height of the water in there. On the first floor, and the height of the water came to the beginning of the balcony. We had 9-10 foot of water on the first floor. Well, obviously everything was gone.
How did you get up there?
This was afterwards.
Into the store. How did you get?
Somebody took the picture. Somebody in the store took the picture. So people were marooned. They stayed there. See that they were in a they were marooned. Well, what happened, knowing that there could be a potential, some of the businesses and the stores around there sent people over to the two hotels in the area overnight so they could be there in the morning to help they were required to remove the remove the merchandise of the pictures and things, and they got marooned in the hotel. So they had themselves a paid vacation for 3 or 4 days. Nobody could move. But it was a disaster, that there's no question about it, because when you walked in and you saw that the waters receded, you could see the muck and the grime and the odor in the place. And the water didn't get too much up on Upper Smithfield Street. There was just enough of grade there to stop it. Frank and Cedars, I think, got a little water in their basement. Kaufman's were not touched. So neither was Gimbel's too much. So the other stores were sending down blankets and things to help the people that were in there, that were caught. They got around by rowboat. And until, obviously, everything receded. I just don't remember how long it was. I do remember the flood going up to the Highland Park Reservoir. We rode up there, some of us. And to the right, of the old reservoir overlooking the Allegheny River. The water was, I think, just about up to, maybe over the old Highland Park Bridge. And you could see debris floating down, beds, furniture, things washed away, just being moved down.
Were you actually at the department store when some of this was taking place? I know you said that you left one night and you knew that the water was getting high. Then the next day you came into downtown Pittsburgh and they stopped at 7th and Grant.
Right. Right.
What did you do at that point? Did you go on to the store?
Couldn't go. No, they were rowboating up Fifth Avenue, yes, as far as Wood Street, trying to take people out of buildings.
Mm-hmm.
So I just walked around, and then the power eventually went. Fortunately, I was able to get home before the power went. And made it. But the several days that the power was out, there was snow. That was a result of, well, we had a blizzard at that time, heavy snow, but the flood was caused by the heavy outpour of water accumulating, mm-hmm, up in the mountains. Everybody took snow and put it in their bathtubs and things and places they could put it. And then you melted it down, and when snow melted, you boiled it for drinking water, but that only lasted a couple of days. But that was one of the things everybody made. It was an adventure, unfortunately, a sad adventure, but one of those, yes, things that you did. Nobody starved or anything, but which you probably read in the paper, what got out, it was a catastrophe, and no trains, nothing moved, nothing could come in. And people were getting calls, and the lines were jammed all over the country. Even from Europe were trying to find out if people were living or dead, because there were stories that got out. They thought it was a tremendous loss of life. There wasn't.
So then the that was one thing I was going to ask you. Were the telephone lines affected?
I don't think so, no.
So you were able, or someone was able, to communicate with those people who were marooned in the store?
Only if they knew how to operate the system. Maybe the power was off. I don't know. No, I'm talking about residential.
Okay. But the power was off to the store. There were people who were marooned there, and they were trying to salvage some merchandise, etc. I just wondered if anybody was able to keep in touch with them other than by going there in a rowboat, or if they just did what they thought was the best thing to do.
They did the best thing they could, though. Mm-hmm. They knew they were stuck and there wasn't much they could do. The main thing they were,
yes,
concerned with in the store was heat, something,
yeah,
to eat.
Yeah.
Fortunately, there was enough to eat, because the one of the restaurants was on the balcony and that wasn't hit. They could go down and get food. But if you were stuck up on the 11th or 12th floor, you had it was a walk up and a walk down, total darkness. So people didn't move around much, I can,
yes,
tell you there.
Was there any disease?
That's very good. We're going to that.
Anyway.
Was there disease? Any diseases?
No. They cleaned up very fast down there. I cannot answer you on that because it never surfaced. I've never even seen it in anything in the history of Pittsburgh. What was interesting, you haven't asked me, how'd they get the water out of the basements?
That would be interesting. Please tell us.
Well, what they did, they brought in fire engines, pumpers, and they finally got quite a few in because they got all the volunteer engines companies to come in. And they had a bonanza because they were charging the big sum of $75 or $100 a day to pump. Some of them were. And it didn't make any difference whether they charged or not. You took what you could get because you wanted to clean up and get out from under. But they stayed there some. They were pumping water for several weeks out of some of these buildings. I remember going in the First National Bank, which is that now People's, which is located at Fifth and Wood. And I think that was the only bank in the city that had its vault downstairs at that time. Although, no one didn't have a spig with it. Well, you can imagine what kind of a unpleasant situation that was. All the safety deposit boxes flooded, but they had... they took pictures of people ironing out money and stock certificates. And,
I was wondering, at that particular time, do you suppose most of the merchants were insured? Doubtless it's a disaster, whether you are or not. It's terrible. But sometimes that can help
a little. I don't think so. Okay. Never heard any talk of it. Later on there was. But I don't think anybody ever heard of flood insurance in those days. They should have known better because Pittsburgh was eventually getting flooded down at the point, but nothing to the depth, the length that this came up.
So then everyone really had to rebuild from the bottom up. In other words, you didn't help it. You didn't have any help from insurance proceeds or whatever.
Oh, no, no.
Had to start over.
I'm not too sure about that. I heard some talk, but that wasn't my concern.
Yes.
And I'm sure there was something, I don't know, I can't ask you. You'd have to ask somebody in the business in that era. They could tell you. It could be. I don't know, but nothing on the scale that we could talk about today. And the cost of it was horrendous.
Do you have any idea of the actual cost in dollars lost?
No. No. I don't know whether they ever made any survey of that or not. He had to hire extra manual labor to come in and sweep and clean, and then you had to be passed by the Board of Health whether you could open again or not. He came down and inspected. But it was pretty well organized. There were no riots, there was no looting, there was nothing like that going on.
That's marvelous. And I also had wanted to ask you about health and medical care as you were growing up here in the city of Pittsburgh. And things must have been fairly advanced because I would have thought with all of that flooding and the other things that occurred that there might have been some outbreaks of disease, but you say that really there weren't, and the health department seemed to be inspecting places before they reopened.
Now, Pittsburgh always had a very good health department for a long time. Many of the cities, I guess, didn't. Some of it could have been politics. But Dr. Mayer, I believe Dr. Edward Mayer, was the first official city health inspector. He was in charge of the city department. You can check me on that. But he was involved in planning for the city health measures.
Mm-hmm. At the time of the flood, was the health complex that we have here in Oakland now pretty well established? None at all.
The only help that I remember being there was Montefiore Hospital.
I was going to say, I thought Montefiore was there.
No, the old hospital was down on Bedford Avenue.
Mm-hmm. But Presbyterian Hospital and Children's Hospital and the University of Pittsburgh Medical School weren't in existence then?
Oh, I thought medical school was in existence, yes. Mm-hmm. I think, but after the hospital, I don't know. Fortunately, that was not a patient. The only hospital I was in when I was young was Montefiore. So I don't know what was going on in Oakland. I imagine they were built mainly in the 20s,
mm-hmm.
when the rebirth of the area, that is the development of the area, occurred.
Could you tell us a little about your experience at Montefiore? You mentioned that you were in that hospital when you were younger. Were there mostly private rooms, any physicians on staff?
I was in for minor surgery. I was 11 or 12.
That was on Heron Avenue.
Was it Heron?
Yeah.
It was at the bottom of the hill.
Heron and Center. Center and Heron.
Center and Heron. Yeah. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
You can correct the...
Okay.
I was close enough.
Okay.
For your ordinary medical care, did your family usually use physicians, or were there women in the neighborhood who practiced an informal type medicine?
No. There might have been up in the Hill District. I'm sure there were. No. Most people used physicians. They're registered nurses. They needed care. There was no such thing as an LPN in those days. And everybody tried to work with the Jewish physicians that were there. Sometimes you did, sometimes you didn't, and they were few and far between. But the medical care was adequate. I was delivered by Dr. Carroll, who was at the top obstetrician in those days, one of them. But I was delivered at home. I think all three of us were delivered at home.
Yeah, I think that was usually the case, even if you had a physician in attendance.
And then we switched to some other doctors through the years.
Mm-hmm. Could we go back a little bit again to your adolescent years when you were in high school? Was there very much in the way of unsupervised dating at that time? In other words, did you ask a girl to go out someplace with you, and the two of you went by yourself or with another couple, whatever?
There were no restrictions other than those imposed by the parents. Of course, the girls had to wait until they were asked.
Yeah.
If they could get a date and go out. The boys were not restricted in any way, although we were informed of the facts of life and this and so forth and so on. It was expected that the boys found out in their own ways, if they cared to, other avenues to venture into and date and so forth. But basically, you dated Jewish girls. And as far as our family was concerned, everybody was welcome. I can say this, our family was an open house. There were three children. My mother didn't mind it if an extra person came and stayed for dinner. Matter of fact, she'd invite them sometime. We'd say, all right, Mom, if this can stay, sure. So actually, our house in the group that I ran with for a while, it's a bad expression, but it was one of the more open. I never was invited to some of the other fellows' homes for dinner or anything, although we could go there. But it was not unusual if some of my friends came over and ran into some of the girls that my sisters had, and vice versa. It was a family unit.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't a problem in those days. If you want to call it a problem, the only problem was liquor. The prohibition came in, and I'd venture to say most high school boys, not so much the girls, had a drink of liquor. We drank. I'm not talking about a 15 or 16. I'm talking about 17 or 18. And I can assure you, when you went into college, if you didn't drink beer and the usual and have gin, you were out. But you paced yourself. You didn't get involved or addicted to it. I never saw any addiction.
If you had a date with a girl, where would you usually take her? Or what are some of the things that you might do? To a dance, a movie, a party at home?
You got another tape?
I don't want to know about anyone specific. We're just trying to get an idea of where people went with their dates at the time. What was the usual thing?
I'm trying to divide it into sections. Where did you go? You went in movies, to the movies. If you were lucky, your family had a car and you had permission to use it, then you'd all get into one.